Now McGraw-Millhaven on the home of the Cardinals and the AM home of the Rams. The Big 550, KTRS.
11:08, welcome back. Every Monday we get to check in with Dick Weiss, longtime editor of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. He has a website now, weissright.com, weissright.com, 30 years as editor. And Friday was a sad day for your former colleagues at the newspaper.
Yes, 40 people out the door. There are a few that are hanging in there to tide things over, but basically 40 newsroom employees, 60 in all, and saving the company about $3 or $4 million.
I was sorry to see Harry Levins go.
Harry, I owe him money. Harry taught me basically how to write when I got to the Post-Dispatch. And he's probably best known for his military affairs columns and his book reviews.
Yeah.
And they don't pay very much for book reviews, 40 or 50 bucks, but I think Harry made about $5 million over the years writing book reviews for the Post-Dispatch.
Come on. Are you going to tell me they're not going to have any more book reviews anymore?
Well, they're going to have to find the... I think Harry will continue writing book reviews because that's kind of a freelance thing.
But, okay, all right.
In some papers, book reviews are in jeopardy, though.
Really?
Yes. They're eliminating them or just going to syndicated services for book reviews.
Wow. How about, now his column usually appeared in Saturday's newspaper.
That's correct, yeah. Page 2.
Page 2, right, mm-hmm. on the inside cover there. It was right. great. So I'm sorry to see him, sorry to see him go away. Also, Bernie had a nice column in his Bernie Bits Saturday, I believe, about one of, the, I guess, the worker bees.
Dennis Cutter.
Yeah.
Yes, answering the phone.
In the
sports
department, yeah. So,
yes.
All right, so I guess Bernie and Deb Peterson are the only people left working at the paper.
And Bill McClellan and a few hardy others. Actually, I thought the Sunday paper was one of the better ones that I'd seen in recent weeks. So they held up their end of the bargain.
Well, but all the workers did all the work until Friday.
Well, that's true, but you know, some of them were pressed into service to count millionaire money.
Yeah, what is this story?
Well, as the last day arrives for 40 newsroom employees, they're heading out the door. Lots of other people are heading in to get their millionaire money counted, all the people in the public, and the marketing department was in charge of this, but they needed help. So the call went up to the newsroom, would you please come downstairs? I think they had a little tent city set up outside the paper. Would you please come downstairs and help us count the millionaire money? And some people thought that timing was a little awkward and refused to count the millionaire money. Others went down and did the job.
So, on their last day of work, they were asked...
Well, I think not the people whose last day it was, people.
Who still had a job.
I think that would be really insensitive, but I think it was mostly the exempt non-union employees who were asked to pitch in and help, and of course they were a little busy trying to get the paper out. But
could it be as
how it goes?
Could it be as insensitive as I'm sorry, we don't want you to work here, but will you please go and raise money for the charity today?
Yes, things like that.
Who did that happen to? Oh yeah, never mind. All right, all right. You have a new book coming out. What's
yes,
going on with this?
Yes. Now this story can be told. I hinted a few weeks ago that I had been my wife Sally and I had been. Hired by the Post-Dispatch to do a book, and it is on the history of Forest Park, the jewel of St. Louis. And this book will be, you can order it now. Operators are standing by, it's $34.95, $29.95 for Post-Dispatch subscribers. And you can call 1-877-POST-STL. And order the book, and it will ship on November 19th. And you can learn all kinds of interesting things about Forest Park by reading this book. Actually, looking at this book, because there are not a whole lot of words in it.
But I'm sure there are a lot of factoids in it, though.
Absolutely. Very interesting things. Did you know that Forest Park is the home of the first Jefferson Memorial?
No, I did not know that.
It is built in 1912. Several years after the World's Fair, and they did not get around in Washington to building that Jefferson Memorial until 25 years later.
Where is it?
Which,
the Forest Park?
Well, it's right there on DeBolivar, you know, the grand entrance there with the fountains.
Oh, no, that's
that
considered
one.
The Jefferson Memorial.
That is the first Jefferson Memorial.
Really?
Yeah.
Right by the History Museum there.
Yeah, it's the History Museum at this point.
Right.
And Washington, they didn't recognize Jefferson's greatness, I guess, until... more than a century after that.
Quite frankly.
I
don't think we should have recognized his greatness because Alexander Hamilton was much greater than he was. But that's a whole other issue.
Yeah.
I'm an Alexander Hamilton fan.
Are you really? Federalist?
Yeah. Yes. Much more than Jefferson.
Okay.
Jefferson, well, it's a whole other topic.
Probably for after 1 a.m.
I always get confused. Is Forest Park's bigger than Central Park?
It is. Half again larger than New York Central Park. And it is actually, we were talking about the World's Fair. Initially, the World's Fair was not going to be in Forest Park. They were talking about Carondelet Park because it was on the Mississippi River. And imagine, everything would be all messed up now.
Really? So. Is it true that, was there any history before Forest Park, before the World's Fair?
I don't think so.
Because I mean, that's where
I think there were some, some guys named Shoto and so on. And,
right.
And Laclede, but really nothing. Nobody.
Laclede, Shoto, Forest Park.
Basically, that was it.
Fair. And did you find pictures? Supposedly, when Lindbergh came back from his flight across the Atlantic, they had a rally on Art Hill.
There was 100,000 people. We have a beautiful picture of that. 100,000 people were on Art Hill, and Lindbergh did a flyover.
That's what it was. Okay,
1927. And then he came down and he landed somewhere, I don't know where. And then he came and he spoke. And then he and his family gave their artifacts from the Spirit of St. Louis to the History Museum. The stuff is still there.
How about that? Now, these pictures, I'm sure some of them are so spectacular. Is there a way to get a reprint of these pictures for ourselves?
I bet there is. I we probably ought to ask about that. But you can basically call the Post-Dispatch now and order any picture that is in their archives. They will pull it out and charge you
really?
For that. Yeah.
Oh, okay, good. All right, so this would be a great Christmas present, I suspect.
Yes. I should also tell you one other thing. There's a little bit of a dark side to Forest Park.
Ooh.
Because, as you know, in the days of Jim Crow, the facilities were not open to all. And if you were an African-American and a golfer, first they told you that at some point, we're going to build a golf course for blacks. Of course, they never did.
Right.
And then they opened the golf course for blacks, but you could only play on Mondays and only from 8 to noon. And if you were on the 6th tee at noon and the whistle sounded, you better get off of there. How bad that was.
How long did that go for?
That went into the 30s, and really the facilities at Forest Park were not open equally to all until the late 40s, early 50s.
Wow.
So.
Wow. Interesting. All right. Speaking of race, we have the news of Clarence Thomas speaking after some 16 years. And I think, maybe it's me, I think some of this stuff is a bombshell. I know it's 16 years later, so maybe the luster of the proceedings have sort of left us. But I still think 16 years later, I mean, it's still fascinating to hear this man speak.
Yes, in part because since the hearings, he had remained really quiet.
Right.
He had not said hardly anything publicly. He'd given speeches, but really didn't
never comment
with what he had been through.
Right.
He talked about the law and things like that. And
right.
Of course, he can't talk about cases, so what he had to say wasn't all that compelling. But now he's opening up, and he sounds just as bitter as he was so many years ago when he accused Congress of launching a high-tech lynching.
That still resonates today, that high-tech lynching, and he takes into account the media, the perception of a black man who is a conservative, therefore must be a race traitor because he's not voting with his people, which he says is inherently racist.
Racist, yes.
And he, quite frankly, has a valid point.
Yeah. He makes a point in that regard, but it also is true that when he was nominated to the court, his background and his experience were suspect, to say the least, in terms of his qualifications. Leaving Anita Hill aside, he could be challenged on that. Then you have Anita Hill, and the thing that I thought was kind of interesting, that he's coming back on her and saying, that she was a mediocrity. Oh, gosh, leave it alone. Because all the media is going to be racing to her.
Right, right.
And open
right.
up that can of worms.
Right.
And
16 years later, she has moved on. I think she's a professor at Brandeis University, yeah. I believe now.
Yeah. And I don't know. It's still mysterious what really happened. You know, what did he say to her and so on and so forth?
He claims that she was caught up as part of the machine to take him down, and she was the, you know, she was the face of it all.
But the problem is, it wasn't just a matter of being used. Somebody was telling lies.
Right.
Anita Hill or Clarence Thomas.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
And we still don't know.
And he but I go back to that time, and the picture of the Judiciary Committee sitting up there with the goods. You had Kennedy, you had Strom Thurmond, you had this one, you had that one, and they're all talking about the sexual peccadilloes of Anita Hill and Clarence Thomas. And they all had stuff in their own past. It was,
oh, absolutely.
I mean, it was the greatest Saturday Night Live skit ever.
And the as I think Justice Thomas pointed out in the 60 Minutes interview, a precursor of the Clinton material.
Yeah.
You know, that people would be going after him, hammer and tong, in much the same way, with their own different agendas and biases. And it's just maybe that's a marker for when things, civil discourse, came unraveled in Washington.
That's
and still is.
Yeah, it's interesting. So they say the 25% of the book is a lot about that. I'm right after the show, I'm headed straight to go buy it. I can't wait to read it. I find it fascinating. All right, anything else? Oh, what is the... you wanted to mention something about the subscription rate increase?
Oh, yes. I promised last week that I would look into this, as some people found out today. Hopefully a lot of people found out today because they're still interested in reading the newspaper. Today, a single copy of the Post-Dispatch costs 75 cents.
So it was 50.
Now that's a 50% increase.
Okay, now hold on a second. Is the Sunday newspaper going up any?
No.
Just the Monday through Saturday?
Right. Okay. Monday through Saturday, and you're... there are still bargains to be had if you get a subscription. And I looked around the country. I said, what other papers have gone up? You can still get a Kansas City Star, just called, still 50 cents on the newsstand. New York Post went from 25 to 50 cents in April. Wall Street Journal, buck to buck 50 in July. Baltimore Sun, 50 to 75 cents in August. The Spokesman Review in Spokane, Washington, went up to 75 cents. So this seems to be taking hold. Now, what seems strange is if you are selling fewer papers, is it smart to raise the price, or should you go down? Now, I remember you said that maybe more stuff should be sold online.
Yeah.
And immediately after hearing you say that, the New York Times
did away
decided,
with Times Select.
Yes, yeah. Yes. They said McGraw is going this way. If McGraw zigs, we will zag.
Okay. I thought that.
Now, I was reading a blog, and one thing that one guy suggested was that people love the sports section, okay?
Right.
And if you want a paper with a sports section, maybe you should charge more for that paper, because, and interestingly, advertisers do not necessarily want to be in the sports section for whatever reason. You can sell some tires in the sports section, but not a whole lot of things. Now, the news section, which is less popular with readers but more popular with advertisers, they say, give that baby away. You get more advertising in it, more circulation.
Right.
So if you want to just get the news section, give it to readers free. If you want the sports section, charge them an arm and a leg.
Right.
A buck 50. You think that would work?
Really? Advertisers don't like being in the sports pages?
Only the ones who want to help you with your sexual prowess, I think.
Now, hold on.
And tires.
You have to have seen survey after survey. What's the most popular section in the paper?
Well, you can make actually the feature section.
Really?
And then the sports section. The sports section would be higher. Except it's so heavily male, so you're leaving out a lot of women.
Sure.
Of course, for a lot of women fans.
Sure.
But and so it was the feature section, the sports, and then news and Metro, and it kind of worked that way. But I'll tell you one thing. If you leave that horoscope out of the paper, you are in big trouble. So maybe they ought to charge $2 for that.
For the horoscope. All right. Quickly, what's the best story we've
never
read?
Best story is a piece out of the New York Times by Solomon Moore. He calls it Reporting While Black. And you've heard of that expression, driving while black, where
right.
policemen pay a little bit more attention to African Americans than they otherwise might. Solomon Moore tells a story of how he was reporting an inner-city neighborhood in Charlotte, and the police accosted him because he happened to be loitering, and he looked like every other person in that neighborhood.
Right.
You know, bald guy, young, kind of, you know, looking good. And they slam his head down on their cruiser and handcuff him and all that. And so that, you know, that's a downside of reporting while black. But the problem was, as you get to the end of the story, is that the people in the hood did not give Solomon his props either. They said, man, we would have been in jail by now. If we So it's a very entertaining story and also very illuminating.
All right. That's
it's in the New York Times.
That's also at weisswright.com as well. There's a link to it there. Dick, great seeing you, and we'll see you next week.
Okay.